It's Thursday, November 11th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central Podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com, the world's largest domain register. Get your promo codes at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Show number 720 and is also sponsored in part by Citrix GoToMeeting with HG Faces, the world's best conferencing solution. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com, press the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Haven't got a great show lined up for you last night here in the nation's capital, ready to head back to Honolulu and be back in the real studio, I guess, per se. I've got a great show lined up for you tonight. You know what comes next. Strap in. Here it comes.
Coming to you from a dimly lit hotel room with bad Wi-Fi and not enough power outlets, here's everyone's favorite jet-lagged geek, Todd Cochran.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast, to me coming to you as live as it can be from Washington, D.C. via the Geek News Central Portable Studio. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Of course, again, my name is Todd Cochran. I want to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content. Of course, check out our archive podcasts available via the podcast link on the website. And you want to get subscribed to the show, that's real easy to do. You'll find in the second column of the website, you'll find information there on how to subscribe to all our shows. The Gadget Professor, Robot Underpants, Saturday Morning Tech. Of course, I'll be back in Honolulu tomorrow, which is actually Friday, and then we'll be doing a Saturday Morning Tech Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific. Actually, the clocks have changed, so I guess I get to get an extra hour's sleep. So we'll start at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. We don't change our clocks in Hawaii like the rest of you had to last weekend. So now I'm on a 5-hour difference from the East Coast versus a 6-hour, so that's going to be kind of cool. Won't have to get up at 5 a.m. to do that show. But of course, make sure you get over to the website again. We've got great content over there. Our writers are doing a fantastic job of bringing you daily tech news and information. Of course, we bring you about 6 hours of programming every week for you to tune in as well on the variety of shows on the network. Of course, I want to welcome our listeners and viewers from around the world. Welcome to the show, and thanks for staying subscribed. All of you that are longtime members of the show or longtime Ohana, thanks for being here as well. Of course, you can watch us on the Tech Podcast channel on the Roku, Boxy, Samsung Smart TV. So we're all over those devices. You can watch us on those devices anytime. Just point your remote at the Tech Podcast channel there, and you'll find us in the lineup. Of course, I want to thank GoDaddy, one of our longtime sponsors of the show, for being a sponsor here. We've got some great deals from GoDaddy right now. Want to make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy and check out all the sponsor deals that are going on. We've got a giveaway that we're going to introduce on the next show, so I want you to pay attention to that. And of course, we're going to have some new deals for you for the Christmas holidays. But all the promo codes there are going to save you a lot of money. Of course, the promo code Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. The code Aloha will save you $20 on orders $75 or more. There's a whole lineup of codes there, plus special monthly deals. Again, you'll find that information at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. They are largely responsible for helping keep the lights on here on the show. We want to thank them, of course, for being a sponsor. And, of course, we'll talk more about them and the special deal I'm going to offer up to you on the next show. Well, just to let you know, my trip here in D.C. has been an exhausting one. I've got a to-do list, and let's see here. This is just part of it. And last night I came back to the hotel after meeting with clients, and it was about 7:30 or 8, and then I've got this long list of stuff I have to get done. I got ad proposal, campaign results to get in, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, you ever get so much stuff to do that you just kind of, and you're so tired, you just, like, you can't even handle it. And it was that way last night. I face planted and woke up this morning and took care of some of it, but I definitely need to get back to Hawaii, where I'm going to be more dialed in and being able to dedicate time to getting this stuff done. So it's going to be definitely a working weekend once I get back, and we're going to be having a CES meeting that day. So we'll definitely be talking to our content creators about what we're going to be doing at CES. I'm going to be holding a series of meetings with the companies next week on sponsorships for CES. And we're even thinking about maybe even doing a Kickstarter this year for CES content. And part of it is the operation for CES has gotten so big. And whenever you get big like that, your expenses go up considerably. So I'm just kind of getting the feedback. I'd like to have you guys email me here, those of you that listen to the show, in the next couple of days, because I need a quick feedback if we're going to do this. What do you think? Do you think you would be willing to throw some money in on a Kickstarter to have, you know, help us with our CES 2012 coverage? Love to hear your thoughts on that. Of course, Kickstarter is a place where we would put together an innovative plan on what we would bring extra to you from what we normally do at the show. And for that, you would get, you know, that's what you would get for your donation for the Kickstarter. So I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on that, and definitely send me an email. This week has been full of meetings, and we've been talking with politicians and different business people here in the D.C. area, largely because our new media generator that we have at Raw Voice as a white label service has gotten attention of some political pundits, I guess, for a better word, and we've had some meetings from some high-level political people this week, and I feel that very well could have some new clients coming on using our generator for their new media needs, so it's just pretty exciting. We'll see how that works out. But again, it's been a very full week. I'm ready to head back to Honolulu. Of course, the Asia-Pacific Economic Council is going on. The president, along with, I think, 11 other Asian leaders, are going to be in Honolulu. So it's chaos there right now from traffic standpoint. My wife is very pleased I'm getting back Friday afternoon, because the main highway that we are basically semi-connected to, well, not just the off-ramp that we're connected to, is they're shutting that down Saturday for a while the president and all these other dignitaries move down to our side of the island. They're going to be meeting at Ko'olina, which is a resort, Marriott resort. They're going to be having meetings there, I believe, Saturday and Sunday. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the chaos of APEC being in Honolulu and the demonstrators and everything else. But I get in Friday afternoon about 2:45 Honolulu time. So I'm sure I'll share about that with you on Saturday morning. But, of course, I want to, you know, remind everyone that tomorrow is Veterans Day. And if you know of a veteran and you have someone in the family that served, please tell them thank you for their service tomorrow. I know many of you federal workers, and those of you are going to actually have an off day tomorrow. I know that many of you get this as a national holiday. So enjoy the holiday, and definitely thank a veteran. You know, it leads into, and it's really not a technical story per se, but I saw in the news about this situation with the Air Force handling some remains in a, for all I can describe, is a very disgusting way, and how some service members' remains, I don't know exactly what the full circumstances are, but all I know is hearing about service members' remains ending up in a dump thoroughly disgusts me, and I hope they hold the people responsible, and I'll find out the rest of the story on it, but yeah, just sad, and it's hard to believe that someone would actually do that. But anyway, that is going to, I'm sure they'll get that resolved here over the next few weeks, and there will be some changes put in place. But if I was a family member that had some of my loved ones' remains put in a dump, I'd throw up. I just can't believe it. It's quite shocking to me. But anyway, I don't know if it appalls you as much as it appalls me, but having served for 24 years, it's, you know, just to think if something had happened to me, you know, to think that my remains, part of my remains could have ended up in a dump is beyond shocking. My wife would have definitely made sure I got put in the right resting place, but boy, oh boy, just... it's shocking to say the least. Okay, well, anyway, didn't have a lot of other news updates. I want to get us right into the content here tonight. We got a great lineup of content to go through And I hope you guys, the show was a little shorter last show, about 15 minutes versus my normal hour and 20 minutes. We'll try to keep you to a shorter schedule tonight as well, as I got to pack up and be at the airport at 4:30 in the morning. But one thing I found, even this week while being on travel, that with a fast-paced work environment, get everyone in the same room for a meeting can really be a challenge, especially when people work in different locations. And that's why I use GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. It's really amazing. You can collaborate online by sharing your presentation while seeing colleagues face-to-face in high definition. The video quality is so clear, it's basically like being in the same room. And all you really need is an internet connection and a webcam. It's just that easy. You know, I love GoToMeeting with HD Faces. I've used it a lot. I've used it on these last 2 weeks of being on the road. I can share any document on my computer screen with anyone in my online meeting, and they can see their reaction to my presentation. I've actually done some sales pitches that way this week. It's been pretty cool in between actual in-session meetings on the Hill. But, you know, facial expressions tell you so much, and you can really react and make changes to proposals on the fly. And with HD Faces, the meetings are more personal, they're engaging and effective, and I want you to try GoToMeeting with HD Faces today. As a listener of this show, you can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait for the special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use the promo code PODCAST so we get credit for your trial. And I want to thank, of course, Citrix GoToMeeting with HD Faces for being a sponsor here at Geek News Central. All right, let's go ahead here and open up the Chrome and see what we've got in the stack. Do you guys realize tomorrow is 11-11-11? I just kind of looked at the data. Today's 11-10-11. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Tomorrow's 11-11-11. So there's a whole blog post about it over at timeanddate.com talking about a date with a special meaning. And, well, it's just a date. But, of course, anyone that likes numbers busts this thing down, and they go into all kinds of different things about 11-11-11. It's quite the binary day, if you want to say it that way. All right, first article up on really in the tech side. Of course, iOS 5.1 update is available. And what was really cool is I was sitting here doing my show prep tonight, had my iPhone out, and my wife has just texted me, please pay the T-Mobile payment. I did. Anyway, so, you know, I'm sitting here, and I saw that the update was out. I went to settings, and this was real simple. I went to settings, and I clicked on general. And then here in general, there's a link. It's for software update. Click that, and it says, do you want to update? And I said, yes. And it says, plug into a power cord, and I did. And it downloaded the update, which was only about 45 megs. And in about 5 minutes, the phone was updated to iOS 5.0.1. And it was just that simple. I mean, it was slick. It just, it worked. And, you know, updating the iPhone up to this point has been really a pain in the butt. So this was the first wireless update that they've ever done. And we don't have to sync it on iOS 5. You don't have to have it hooked up, you know, to the cable and have it hooked to iTunes or anything like that. So it really was pretty cool. And also on this trip for the first time, when I've been in D.C., I've been finding more and more places where I'm actually connected to an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot. And that's been kind of interesting too, because that's really the first time I've seen these in this area. First time I've ever seen my phone connect to one of those. And I don't know, do you see your phones connecting to an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot anytime? And again, really, it was the first time I'd seen it here, even though the cell connection's good. I've got a good 5 bars. It was, you know, must be a have enough of a density of an area that they can put these in and hope people will actually use them. My phone just connected to it. I didn't even really have to work at it. But make sure you get your update for your iPad and your iPhones. That release is up and available for you. But the Air update made it just really slick and easy. Well, there's been a takedown, and more information has emerged about how 7 alleged Estonian and Russian hackers indicted by the United States on Wednesday managed to hijack over 4 million computers worldwide and rake in over $14 million from legitimate businesses. And this scam dates back to 2007, made use of a common botnet Trojan to divert web traffic from its intended destination to that of advertisers who paid for traffic delivery. So here's what is kind of interesting, is they basically were doing reroutes. They hijacked people's computers. They set it up so your DNS would go to certain pages, and it would basically reroute you, and you would, every time you're loading a page, you're getting, they were basically getting banner ads displayed, and this group made $14 million off of regular companies, and it was called Operation Ghost Click because people really didn't know that this was going on. Now, still they're saying that millions of computers are still infected, and the FBI has provided a web tool for users to check if their DNS server is one of the rogue servers and provided a list of their IP addresses. So this takes about 30 seconds to check, and make sure that you you do that. Make sure your computer isn't one of those that have been hijacked and you maybe didn't know it all this time. So I have the link up in the show notes for that. That was an article over on ArsTechnica.com. Big news out of the Federal Trade Commission and Facebook today. Facebook is apparently in a near agreement to settle a case with the FTC by making all of its privacy settings opt-in instead of opt-out. So that means that you will not share anything with anyone by default unless you specifically choose to do so. The settlement in this case would require Facebook to obtain express affirmative consent if it wants to make changes to what is shared by users. Changes in December 2009 to the privacy policy of Facebook made certain bits of user information like names, pictures, cities, genders, and friends publicly automatically, which many of us were not happy about and that we've talked about extensively on this show in the past. Now, under this agreement, Facebook will have to submit to privacy audits for the next 20 years, which is similar to a concession that Google made with the FTC back in March. So we will see what happens with this. And we're going to see if that Facebook actually goes through and changes everyone's privacy settings. And when you have to log in, you're going to have to go through the privacy settings once more. We don't know. I know that I logged into Facebook this afternoon, hadn't been on there in more than a week, and actually looked to see if I was prompted to do anything. And maybe it's not all in place yet, but the nextweb.com says that this is about to, you know, this information is about to be publicized. They had the early scoop on it, so we'll see where this leads. But I think that's good news for all of you that use Facebook and have been concerned about your privacy settings. I was very excited this afternoon to see that Sony has opened the registration for the PlayStation Suite SDK beta, which are letting developers build apps for the Android and Vita. Now, what this is that Sony and the PlayStation Suite SDK, which they announced was being released during the Tokyo Game Show in September, what they're going to be doing is those getting the nod from Sony will be able to develop apps on the PS Vita, which is set to hit the United States in February, along with PS Suite. This is a hardware-neutral framework that will allow access from non-PlayStation-branded products, including the Xperia Play, Tablet S, and Tablet P, with the potential for third-party devices coming as well. So what does this mean? Well, it means you're going to have a PlayStation-certified device in which you're going to be able to build apps to, and you know, this is big. Okay, this is really a big deal, and it's obvious that Sony is trying to get back in the game here. It's obvious that they want their marketplace to be more viable, more things to do on the device. So if you buy a PS Vita or you buy the PlayStation Suite, you potentially, if you're invited into this development program, you could be able to build games or apps, just like we built apps for the Samsung Smart TV, for Roku, for Boxy. So, I mean, I sent this over to Angelo immediately, and I told him, I said, man, just see if we can get on this list. So I'm sure he applied this afternoon, but it's a pretty exciting time for those of us that build apps for these types of devices. Although we don't do games, and maybe that's what Sony's focus will be, I'm just hoping that they'll let media apps be on there as well. Now, how many of you knew that this past Tuesday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the National Emergency Alert System was tested nationwide? Well, it appears that it was an absolute failure. This was supposed to be a nationwide test at 2 o'clock, lasting for 3 minutes, where they were supposed to break into TV, radio, a variety of different media services and say, hey, this is a test, emergency broadcasting system. We've all heard that, but it was supposed to be a nationwide test, not just a local test. And some Comcast subscribers saw their cable boxes turn to the QVC channel before the alert, while Time Warner customers in New York did not see anything at all. And they are very disturbed about the results. There's already been calls for congressional hearings. And basically, this thing that is supposed to alert us in the event of a national emergency failed. So it makes you wonder, you know. We're going to talk about the government's denial of ever talking to aliens later in the show. But, you know, they announced earlier in the week that they've never talked to aliens, and they do a test on Tuesday about the emergency alert system. It fails. They had the president off somewhere else in some sort of bunker thing going on. So you're like, what was going on? Of course, then we had an asteroid flying by on Tuesday, too. So, you know, all kinds of weird stuff out there for the conspiracy theorists to have fun with. But, yeah, this system has been in place for years and years and years. Didn't work on its first ever. It's been around since I was a kid. And, you know, they if this was a real, you know, if this was an emergency, you would be instructed on which channel to turn to for more official information. You know, we've all heard that, right? So, funny. But it failed. All right, Viacom, switching gears here a little bit, Viacom is saying that by letting people view videos on phones, that YouTube is losing their DMCA safe harbor provision. It's just amazing where they're going with this. Viacom is saying just because we're watching YouTube videos on our phones, that YouTube should not be, you know, afforded the protection of DMCA safe harbors. And they say this, again, it's another attack here to try to get the safe, you know, part of the DMCA stuff restructured by Congress, but this isn't a court hearing, obviously. So Viacom is taking then this argument even further, showing off it's really basically their cluelessness on this. And they're saying that the mere act of YouTube setting up an API that allows YouTube videos show on mobile phones and tablets outside of the browser basically gives them, you know, no longer can they protect companies like Viacom from copyright infringement. So, because they're syndicating. Well, they're really not syndicating. You know, they're just extending their, you know, their brand onto devices that people are consuming media on. So we'll see where this leads. It's just more of the lawyer play. And, it's not surprising, and this is part of their continued whack-a-mole campaign on trying to get Congress to put different rules in effect. Along with that, a glimpse of the future under SOPA, Warner Brothers admits it filed many false takedown notices. So in a lawsuit that's going on right now, where Warner Brothers sued CyberLocker Hotfile, Warner Brothers is admitting that as a component of its takedown process, Warner utilizes automated software to assist in locating files on the internet believed, and the key word is here believed, not verified, to contain unauthorized Warner Brothers content. Warner Brothers admits that it scans and issues takedown notices for a movie called The Box, a 2000 movie, under strictly finding keywords in the title of the actual file listing, and that they didn't even verify that the data that was contained within the file was an actual copyright violation. So they issued takedown notices on open source software. They did all kinds of crazy things, and they didn't even have the right to do so because this content they asked to have taken down was taken down strictly from keyword searches or the name and a title. So, you know, they go even further to suggest that Given the volume and pace of a new infringement on Hotfile, Warner could not practically download and view the contents of each file prior to requesting that it be taken down through the use of a special tool that Hotfile had set up for companies like Warner Brothers. So in other words, if they thought it was infringing, they had your files that were on Hotfile that matched their keyword search to have it taken down because they were too doggone lazy to download it and verify it, and yet violating key provisions of the DMCA. So, you know, you have to verify, this is my material. There's this whole long form in the DMCA because we know we have a DMCA takedown notice thing for raw voice when we have copyright violation issues. And they have to certify, number one, that, yes, this is my stuff. And under perjury of, you know, under the auspices of if you say this is yours and it isn't, you can be charged. And all this heavy legal speak. And yet Warner's saying, well, we don't have time. We're too big. We're too big for this. We don't have to. We don't have to do reviews. We're too big for that. So this doesn't bode well for Warner Brothers' case against Hotfile.com. Those of you on Comcast, hey, be aware here that some customers have been shifted to IPv6. So this is kind of cool. Comcast is launching its IPv6 pilot program as part of a long, grueling global transition away from IPv4. So they're starting to move some people. They're going to allow the old IP addresses to exist alongside the new ones, avoiding slowdowns and so forth. And but they're saying that once this happens, no one's really going to know that it did happen. And so anyway, good move by Comcast. I'm sure some people are going to be worried about it, but I like to see that Comcast is making this move. Today I got to play around with a Samsung Galaxy tablet. A guy was showing me an application that he's developing, and I got to play on with it for a little bit. And, you know, I hadn't probably played with a Galaxy tablet since CES 2011. And, you know, I laughed at the guy. I said, you know, this thing definitely looks a lot like an iPad, you know, the way it was, you know, shape and everything, and obviously different sizing. So it doesn't look like like an iPad. I said, who are you kidding? I, you know, flipped my iPad up, and we're looking at each other. So I understand why Apple has had so many grievances with Samsung over this, but the Galaxy Tab 8.9 is a pretty powerful tablet, and it is nice. It really, really was. And I got to play some different apps. So I'm looking forward to getting my first Android tablet here in a couple of weeks from the folks at Amazon. And actually, all our apps are ready to go on that new tablet from Amazon. We'll talk about that here in a few minutes about that tablet and the one that's coming out from Nook. But it is showing that the folks at the Android has done very well to keep pace with what's going on with the iPad for sure. Now this is going to blow you away. Only in America could this happen. And this is an article over at Engadget iMobile site, and they're saying China Telecom is looking to expand into the United States consumer market and eyes a 2012 launch. China's third largest wireless provider, China Telecom, is looking to branch into a relative uncharted waters, namely the U.S. consumer market. Basically, the president of China Telecom Americas confirmed that his company plans to bring its own branded wireless service to select U.S. markets next year in hope of capitalizing on the large Chinese communities and consumer base scattered across the country. Who in their right mind would get an account with this Chinese telecom doing stuff here in the United States? You know, okay, folks, Red China coming here to put in a telecom service and you're going to use their service? It's like, you know, it's like giving the Chinese an insight into your entire life, because you know it's going to be tapped. You know it's going to send call home to mama and give you your data. It just blows me away that they would come here to the United States and do business. And first of all, how can this be even legally possible? But I guess it is. They set up an America's division, and They have capacity to spend hundreds of millions or billions of dollars on state-side acquisitions in order to make this happen. So, you know, next thing you know, telecom, you know, that's who it's going to be, Sprint.cn or something like that. I can just see it now, Chinese coming in and buying America. I just can't see how this will stand. But China Telecom looking to expand into U.S. consumer market. Eyes 2012 launch. And I know we have Chinese listeners that listen to the show. I have nothing against the Chinese people. But, you know, I can't imagine Chinese telecom business, which is, who is it controlled by? The government, coming here to the U.S. to do business. It's just shocking. It really is. All right, the Senate voted today on a net neutrality repeal. So this one here kind of snuck up on me, and I didn't know what was going on. There was a bill brought to the Senate floor that basically tried to overturn the FCC's controversial new net neutrality regulations. And this is... was an attempt to shut this down, and this was brought largely by Republicans to the floor. Texas Republican Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson sponsored the resolution, claimed that the FCC regulation would obstruct innovation and investment by jeopardizing the openness upon which the web has thrived thus far. So I think we all can agree that this was, luckily this was overturned. It wasn't an overwhelming victory, but the Senate today rejected the attempt to repeal the FCC's net neutrality rules 52-46 in a vote that largely fell along party lines. Now, those of you that are geeks, those of you that are lean to the right, and we try to keep this show as neutral as possible, but those of you that lean to the right, you should call your Republican senator, and if you feel that this net neutrality rules were a good thing for the tech world, you should express your outrage on them bringing this to the floor and voting, trying to overturn net neutrality. I was... just a little bit appalled about this. No, not a little, a lot appalled. And instead of worrying about the budget and worrying about people getting jobs and all the other stuff, you know, they're here voting on net neutrality, which I think the most of us would agree is probably is a good thing, and keeping the internet as open as possible and you know, trying to stop the companies from dominating it more than they already are. So anyway, this was shot down again, a vote along party lines where the Democrats voted this down in the attempt to repeal this. So this is probably a good win on our side. But you know, if you definitely fall on the right and you don't like what you've just heard, definitely call your local senator and let him know how you feel, or send him an email. Now, being married to a Japanese woman, I'm always looking for, that didn't come out right, my wife is Japanese. My kids speak Japanese. My Japanese is Scotchy, just a little bit. I actually can speak more Japanese when I've had a few cocktails, which, you know, I guess that's pretty normal. But NTT Docomo has begun testing an automated Japanese English translation app that actually works. And this thing, I saw the video on this. This thing's pretty cool. NTT is claiming a success rate of between 80 and 90%, which is a significant improvement over versions we've seen before. The carrier started testing the service with 400 users today and hopes to make it available to all subscribers in the second half of 2012. I just hope they bring this to the United States, because when I go to Japan and I'm trying to communicate to the cousins, the aunties, the nephews and all that stuff, it's like, you know, they speak a little bit of English, I speak a little bit of Japanese, and we haggle our way through, but there are some times that things just don't work, and I would love to be able to speak into my mobile device, let's go have a beer and some noodles, and that would come across the, instead I have to say, watashi wa, go have biro, noodles, so there, we figure it out, you know, and It's horrible, you know, being married for as long as I have, and my Japanese is bad. I've never been good with languages, and some people are more natural at it than others, and I catch a lot of crap all the time, but I like this auto-translation thing, so very cool. All right, let's go ahead and move on here. BoxyBox may be integrating live TV via USB dongle, and this is pretty cool. So if you have a BoxyBox, it appears that they are testing a little adapter that's going to allow you to plug your cable box into it. You can connect an antenna or a cable outlet to the live TV dongle. So this is pretty cool. Haven't seen the price on this, but it's being popped up in a menu. So see where this comes in. Maybe this will be available for the Christmas market. I don't know. But BoxyBox is definitely trying to revamp itself a little bit. All right, preparing for the Kindle Fire, the Amazon App Store updated to version 2.0. Alan Buckingham, one of our writers at Geek News Central, wrote up an article today about this. Next Tuesday, November 15th, of course, Amazon released the much-anticipated Kindle Fire. Mine is advanced ordered. This is the 7-inch Android tablet, which has a number of pre-orders of over 250,000, supposedly. And Amazon has bumped their App Store to version 2.0, and he goes through and talks about the new App Store over at Amazon. So anyway, that's good news. Of course, we have an app over there. The Blueberry app is available on the App Store. All right, over on GigaOhm, this is an article about basically it's like some thugs coming in and demanding money. Almost like the mob coming in and, you know, basically saying, you give me money or else we're going to shut you down. But what's going on is in Belgium, music rights group Sabam has its own unique take on compensation for their artists. And what they've done is that Sabam wants Belgian ISPs to pay 3 to 4% of their subscribers' monthly fees to them under what Sabam is saying was a provision in a Copyright Act of 1994 in Belgium, which states that authors should be paid for any public broadcast or song. And according to Sabam, downloads and streams on the internet are such public broadcasts and therefore entitled to proper compensation. This 3 to 4% share is the same amount as copyright fees on cable television. So they're trying to get the ISPs to pay this instead of the websites that provide the music, which is pretty crazy. So we'll see how this falls out. If you've got a Roku box and you have a Spotify account, good news, Roku users will soon be able to access their Spotify playlist on the device. A dedicated Spotify channel for the Roku is apparently close to being launched, and they've got some screenshots of it, so this will be available soon. So I'm a Spotify user, so this is good news for me. Big news yesterday was that Adobe is abandoning Flash for mobile as well as television as well. So I don't fully understand why they mean by television. That must mean television apps. But Adobe announced yesterday that it would be abandoning its work to enable rich applications on mobile devices through Flash and would be focusing on HTML5 and Adobe Air apps instead. But at the same time that it was working on bringing Flash video and applications to mobile devices, it was... What? But at the same time that it is working on bringing video and applications to mobile devices, it is also hoping to bridge the divide between web video and what could we watch on connected TVs. So this is interesting. So Adobe's saying that they're going to support existing licensees who are planning on supporting Flash Player for web browsing on digital home devices and are using Flash Player porting kit to do so. However, we believe the right approach to deliver content on television is through applications, not a web browser experience, and we continue to encourage the device and content publishing community down that path. So that's interesting here. So this title of this is kind of weird because they're saying they're going to support it, but they want people to do it through apps, but they're going to support existing licensees. So anyway, I think Apple was successful in killing Adobe on or Flash on mobile devices. I know that probably puts a lot of Flash developers in a mild state of panic, but in all honesty, HTML5 is the way to go for consumption of media on a mobile device, and that's why Geek News Central has been a site that has had HTML5 support now for about a year, and of course all our properties at Raw Voice are HTML5 enabled as well. And you can watch the content on any devices. You just don't have to worry about having to have a Flash-enabled device. Google Talk and Hangouts are close to going native in Chrome. This is good. So that means those of you that have a Chromebook, Chrome users are going to be able to access Google Talk and Google Plus Hangout videos through a native open-source implementation based on WebRTC, as opposed to the proprietary plugin that currently bundled with the browser. So this is good. So that means those of you with a Chromebook are going to be able to do this shortly. They haven't announced the exact date, but it could not happen too soon. I'm really excited about this update to Chrome. Police officers have a new thing to protect themselves. It's a clipboard. And I guess what's happening now is that most criminals are knowing that most police officers are wearing vests. And so what they're doing instead, some criminals are, instead of shooting for the chest, criminals are shooting for headshots. And what they're doing is a company called Impact, it's an armor technology company out of Cleveland, they're developing a clipboard, which a lot of police officers carry. And the clipboard can be designed to come up in front of your face, so that if they're in a situation where a gun is pulled on them and they can't get out of the way quick enough, there's a way they can pull this up, and it's a bulletproof clipboard. So interesting to see that this is being sold and made available really to anyone for $150. I guess it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime, have-to-use things, but an interesting way to put body armor in the hands of law enforcement. So we'll see how well this is adopted. If you start seeing police officers walking around with clipboards that look just a little bit different. Okay, Nook tablet versus Kindle Fire. So here's the skinny on this. The Nook tablet and Kindle Fire both have app stores. Amazon tablet has a bigger selection. Its gaming library in particular is much more diverse, with categories for role-playing games, strategy games, shooters, and more, where the Nook focuses on mostly a lighter fare of apps. The Amazon App Store also offers more free apps and gives away one paid app every day. So here's a big difference between in the actual video portion. Streaming media. Netflix is integrated with the Nook tablet, pushing recommendations to users' home screen, and Hulu Plus is preloaded, making Barnes & Noble's tablet a strong streaming video device. Although the Kindle Fire has its own streaming video service through Amazon Prime, it's only ideal for people who already subscribe to the $79 per year service. So we're going to give the edge to streaming media to the Nook. As far as reading goes, they're kind of almost head-to-head. They're kind of a toss-up because they all do read and record, and they do kinds of some other things too as well. On-demand media, though, the Kindle Fire will let you purchase or rent videos on demand and includes access to Amazon's MP3 store. Best of all, any content you purchase from Amazon is stored online for free, so you don't have to worry about wasting storage space on the device. The Nook tablet doesn't have a way to let you buy music and video on the device, so you have to bring your own content from elsewhere. So ultimately, it looks to me like the advantage for the actual two devices is on the Kindle side. And the Kindle Fire edges out the Nook by a little bit. I guess it also depends on where you do most of your shopping. The specs are pretty close. Both tablets look pretty good on paper. But Barnes & Noble does have an advantage. Its ability to offer free support and free Wi-Fi and special offers for a Nook tablet or at its retail stores. So that's one advantage if you're in their retail store. And again, the cloud storage with the Kindle Fire is different as well, and it includes a web browser called Silk that taps Amazon Web Service to load pages faster. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes, but I'm putting my money on the Kindle. Is anyone buying a Nook? I'd love to hear you guys' feedback on this, okay? Someone's asked me if we're going to have a Google Hangout for Saturday show. I may. I haven't decided if I'm going to do it via Hangout or if we're just going to do it live. I've invited Jeffrey Powers from Geekazine.com, and I've invited Rob Greenlee from Zune to talk about Blogworld. Obviously, we've both been back a week and had some time to absorb and think about what happened at Blogworld. We're going to talk about that in depth because all three of us were at the show. And so I don't know if I'm going to do it with just them two or if we're going to do a Hangout. So I'll make up my decision tomorrow, and I'll just kind of talk it over with the guys, but I'll announce it one way or another, and you guys can join if you want to, if we do it on a Hangout. All right, scientists are pretty jittery here in there, but they're excited. As we talked about in the last show, the $2.5 billion Curiosity rover is loaded up and ready to go. And you guys, you know how this thing's going to do its reentry in August of 2012, right? It's going to initially reentry. It's going to come in, and it's going to be on a parachute. And then at a certain point, the parachute's going to disconnect, and the descent package is going to essentially, the rockets are going to, four rockets are going to launch up, and it's going to hover when it gets to a certain level, and then it's going to lower the rover, set the rover down, and then let it go, and then the retraction package is going to blow off into an area away from it. And this is obviously not risk-free. Oh, that was nice. I'm on space.com, and I got a nice ad there that you all just heard. So anyway, this is going to be a fun landing, and I'm sure there's going to be some nail-biting going on. But again, we're going to have a launch to Mars here around Thanksgiving. So see what happens. Now, the Russians launched their first probe to Mars, and they've had some problems. Their Phobos Grunt Mars probe did not, the second stage did not ignite. So what's happening right now is this probe that they launched has got a few weeks of a window in order to basically meet the, you know, to get the outflow out to meet the Mars orbit. And they feel that they've just got a few weeks to make this happen, but the second stage didn't go the way it was supposed to. So the engineers at Russia are trying to figure out what's going on and figuring out why the candle didn't light. So this could be in big jeopardy here. This thing could end up, it's in such a low orbit that they feel that within a couple of weeks, if they're not able to make this happen, that the actual, this probe will actually come right back into Earth's atmosphere and burn up. So we'll see what happens with this. But the Russians think they can get it fixed. We'll see how it goes. We'll report as news comes available. Now, my wife and I, when we go to Japan, oftentimes we will take ANA, All Nippon Airlines, and they've got the 787 now, the 787 Dreamliner. It's a pretty amazing airplane. They're the first airline to take possession of a 787. There's some pretty cool videos on this on Gizmodo. I'll have the link up in the show notes. Those of you that are airplane buffs are going to love this airplane, and I can't wait to fly on one of these for the first time. I don't think any American carriers have this available, and we're not planning to go to Japan anytime soon, but they're saying it's much quieter than other airplanes, has really large windows, has nice, pleasant LED lighting, and the interior design is great, unless probably if you're sitting in coach. And the lavatory is hands-free, which is pretty cool. So I'm, along with the editor of this, I can't wait to fly in the 787. We'll see how, when a first American carrier picks one up. Now, if you're an HTC fan, if you have an HTC phone, specifically an HTC Rhyme, an HT Sensation, it can sync with iTunes. According to Taiwan News, the HT Sync app will automatically detect iTunes or Windows Media Player to copy media files such as music, pictures, and contacts to the phones. So I'm sure this will probably come to a halt very quickly as Apple will figure out a way to block this, but HTC has figured out a way to basically trick iTunes in letting you to sync your phone. So if you got an HTC Sensation or an HTC Rhyme, you'll definitely want to check out the new sync application and be able to link up with iTunes. There's a good article on the how Siri has or what Apple did to make the 4S recognize when it was coming to the face so that Siri would activate. But apparently there's a single infrared sensor in the phone. Now, some people are complaining it doesn't work real well as you bring the phone to your face. And I don't have a 4S. I've just got a regular 4. But there's a little infrared sensor that can detect when it's close to your face. So this is kind of an interesting move. And I don't know. I don't necessarily like the idea of an infrared sensor being right up against my face. This is how they're doing that. So we'll have to see. Hopefully more comes out on this technology and how they've actually done that, how they enable that. It's, you know, healthcare at this point. We all know how much healthcare costs are, and it's, you know, all of us probably pull our hair out on how much our premiums are. But because so many people are starting, the boomers are starting to retire, there's a good article up on GigaOM talking about this is the time for healthcare tech startups and how there's going to be this huge rush for a lot of people to have health-type businesses, B2B plays, business-to-corporation type opportunities, lots of stuff in technology that we can done to help boomers in the medical as they grow older. So I think this is if you are looking to do a business that is going to probably pay very well over the next 20 or 30 years, definitely some sort of a technical field that involves medical would be big. And they say that it's the prime time right now for people to start companies like that to get to massive amounts of venture capital. So if you've got a health idea, health tech idea, this may be the time to execute. Hey, Zynga, well, they got a little bit of a stock scandal going on. Apparently there has been, Zynga has asked some of its employees to give up some of their stock when they have demoted them to lower positions. And the Wall Street Journal blasted them today. Not a great way to wake up. You know, for a company that's been as successful as they have and as much money as they're earning, it doesn't bode well. And I'd hate to have to go to someone and say, hey, you got to give up the stock options we offered you as part of your position. But basically Zynga's position is, hey, we found some people didn't fit in some higher levels. We moved them to lower positions and we just want the stock back that's befitting of their position. But the way I look at it is if you screwed up and offered the stock, then why take it back? It's your fault and your HR policies. So we'll see where this goes, but it was big news today all over the place. Google has decided to support entrepreneurs around the world with a startup weekend. So this is pretty cool. What they're doing is they're announcing a partnership with Startup Weekend, a global organization committed to promotional entrepreneurship and local communities. And what they're doing is in more than 200 cities and across 6 continents, Startup Weekend holds 54 creation events bringing together entrepreneurs, engineering, product designers, design, marketing, and business folks to build a company from a Friday to a Sunday and launch a product. So they're going to be supporting this in 2012 by expanding into more countries and more cities and coming in with financial dollars. So I think this is a pretty good thing by Google and trying to, help entrepreneurs get launched and get started with new businesses. Pretty cool stuff. If they bring one of these to Honolulu, I'm going to definitely participate. A little bit of science news on the Big Bang Theory and scientists finding some information about a gas cloud. I'll have that link up in the show notes. But again, pretty short show tonight, folks. And the last article I wanted to share with you is about a initiative being done by Google, mostly for students. So here's a way for students and people that are photography nuts to get some exposure. What they've done is that they're going to offer students and photographers around the world a chance to showcase their work on the worldwide stage. And they're offering up a contest. And you can submit stuff in food categories, travel, fashion, action, street pictures, nightlife, sports, sound and science, point of view. And they're going to pick some of the top pictures. They're going to win some cash prizes. And they have to submit their photos by January 31st, 2012. Okay, so this is going to be going on for a while, so you got plenty of time here. January 31st, 2012, and the top 100 entries are going to win a Samsung Galaxy Nexus phone. The top 10 finalists are going to have their work shown at the Satoshi Gallery in London for 2 months, and the grand prize will be, in addition to the exhibition, the winner will go on a once-in-a-lifetime a photography trip to a destination of their choice with a professional photography coach. So this is a chance for students, for adults to get, I think it's only for students, right? Let me look at the submission process here or the rules. Oh, okay. The Google Photography Prize is open to students age 18 and older from all over the world. Okay, a student 18 years and older. So what does that mean when you're not a student? You can be a student until you're 100 if you're going to school. I'm sure there's some specific rules. There's probably some upper age limits to this. So you see, 18 or older on the submission date enrolled in an undergraduate or graduate course at any higher education institution, college, equivalent college. So anyway, there's some rules here. But anyway, this is a pretty cool contest being done by Google. You can find this at, see if I can find the direct landing page. It's google.com/landing/photographyprize. I have a link up in the show notes for you to check it out. All right, let me go ahead and get into the show notes. I mean, the comments that have come in. Had a few comments come in via email. Got an email here from Tim. He says, President Obama says, read my lips, no aliens. So the White House has basically said, hey, we haven't communicated with any aliens. We haven't been in talks with them. We haven't communicated with them. There's been no extraterrestrial content. There's no such thing as UFOs. The White House made the unusual declaration in response to a feature on its website that allowed people to submit petitions that the administration officials must respond if enough people sign on. So in this case, 5,000 people signed a petition demanding the White House disclose the government's knowledge of extraterrestrial things, and more than 12,000 signed another petition seeking formal acknowledgement of an extraterrestrial president engaging the human race. In response, Bill Larson of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy wrote, the U.S. government has no evidence that life exists outside Earth. What about in Earth? On Earth? Or that an extraterrestrial president has contacted any member of the human race. In addition, there's no credible information that said that any evidence is being hidden from the public's eye. But he didn't close the door entirely on a close encounter of an alien kind, noting that many scientists and mathematicians believe that statistically speaking, odds are high that there's life somewhere among the trillions and trillions of stars in the universe. So, of course, the government's going to say, no, we have had no contact with E.T. So what do you think about this? Would they tell us? There's no way. Can you imagine if they could said, oh, yeah, we've had contact with E.T.? You know, no, of course they're going to say they haven't had contact with E.T. It doesn't matter how many people sign a petition. They would never say it if they had. There's no way. The only way the government is ever going to acknowledge that any extraterrestrials exist is if one lands in the Super Bowl, gets off, and said, hey, greetings. That's the only way. And even then, they're going to think it's some publicity stunt. You know, swamp gas, psychedelic drugs, whatever it may be. So what do people think they were going to get? They're not going to tell us. There's no way. They would never tell us. Because the people can't handle the truth. All right, I got an email here from one of our writers, Andrew. He said, hey, Todd, you can't believe this. The Verge reads GNC. He said, here's an interesting thing. GNC gets read by The Verge. Yeah, The Verge linked to one of our articles. So those of you that read The Verge, and those of you that may write for The Verge, thanks for featuring us over there. I've got an email here from Frank. He said, hey, Todd, here's a NASA podcast on Wallops Island. And we've talked about Wallops Island before, so thanks for Frank for sending that all over. Got an email here from Hal. He says, hey, Todd, I found this the other day and found it to be quite interesting. So what he did is they linked me to an article about the receipt. Yes, a typical receipt, you get it at a grocery store or at a restaurant. And so this is pretty cool. So it's over at fastcodesign.com, and it talks about Berg rethinks the receipts. I'll have that up in the show notes. Thanks for that, Hal. I definitely appreciate it. And I got this last email from Kai. He said, in your last podcast, you mentioned that Netflix was being used on consoles and other devices more than on a computer. Here's a bit more of what might be adding to that. On my PC, I cannot watch Netflix. I've tried it on Chrome, Firefox, and IE, but all seems to be crashing when it tries to load the video. It seems to be claiming about a Silverlight plugin. I looked into this and tried everything, but nothing works. From what I've read, it seems like Netflix is saying Microsoft, but Microsoft's saying like it's Netflix. I've tried it again, just not still working. Let me know if you figured out a way to get it to work. For the most part, I watch Netflix on my PlayStation 3 and Asus Transformer, since it works fine on those. Kai, I have no issue watching Netflix on my PC. Has anyone else had issues with watching Netflix on their PC, specifically with the issue he referred to? Love to hear your feedback on that one. Kai, we'll see if he can get you an answer on that. I'm sure the Ohana will come through. And but anyway, if you guys got comments on tonight's show, geeknews@gmail.com. geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. 619-342-7365. Again, we'll be back in Honolulu tomorrow. We'll be doing the Saturday morning tech show bright and early at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. Followed by, and I think my Chromebook is going to be back and fixed, so if there is, we'll have a Chrome show this weekend. Plus, I have a huge stack of paperwork to get through and proposals out to people that are overdue on, and that's never good to be overdue on anything, but this just week has been too crushing for me to stay ahead. But, of course, we'll have a show back for you on Monday. And Thursday of next week in the studio in Honolulu, back to our normal broadcast time at 8 p.m. Hawaiian Standard Time. But those of you that are out here in the East Coast have been able to watch me on Eastern Standard Time. Thanks for doing so. And, of course, I've got a great background behind me, a hotel curtain and stuff. So next trip, we're going to think about bringing the green screen and seeing if we can get you a little better background. But did say I get Wirecast working good. And so far, so good on that. But until next time, everyone, take care. We'll see you next time. And aloha.